Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Hello?
Yes, who's speaking?
Laurie?
Hello, everyone. This is John Anderson, your NASCAR host for tonight on scan number 2787. I do have a call in right now. I'm going to see who this is real quick, and we're going to continue with the show. Hi, good afternoon. This is John. Can I help you? Who's calling in tonight?
Yes, Laurie.
Laurie,
I'm
where are you calling
with Carol.
From? Oh,
I'm calling
yes,
from
Laurie.
San Diego.
Okay, from
I'm
San Diego.
How are you?
Okay. Great. Thank you for calling in. I'm going to put you on hold just for a minute, and while I can finish up with the NASCAR, okay? Hold on, please. Thank you. Well, thanks to everyone for tuning in tonight. This is really a victorious night on a lot of standards for a lot of people around the world, and I'll get to that later. This is our scan number 2787, and that stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. Okay, let you know how many times that we have been doing this, pushing 3,000 plus shows, actually. So big hats off to NASCAR. And we're growing stronger every day. We really are. NASCAR stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. Okay, this is not just a national association. Okay, this is an international association now. And the reason it's grown to that number is because of the people that are associated with NASCAR, okay? Everyone that knows me has been knowing me for years about, how particular I am when it comes to this kind of subject. And I can tell you that NASCAR is the answer for anyone that needs assistance in a lot of things, okay? So, with that being said, that NASCAR, kind of specializes in a lot of different things, but, the child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? And then NASCAR really has a single purpose, and that's to address the issues related, to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violence, physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And then we do so with basically two goals, okay? And number one, that's educating the public, okay? Educating the public today has never been so more important, to get the messages out and to answer the questions that people need to know in order, to prevent. And this is one of the main things that we do specialize here at NASCAR is to educate the public on how to do that. That's why we have people that come on here every night, that are professionals that do this for a living every single day of their lives. And, we have to appreciate what they're doing by educating us, to know exactly, how to deal with things when it's actually seen. That's the other thing, okay? But it's becomes more of a discussion, okay? I mean, with child sex abuse, you know, I mean, this is a proven worldwide pandemic. It's a problem, and it affects everyone, okay? And when I say everyone, everyone that you know or I know, one way or another, and that means everyone, your family, your brothers and sisters, someone in your family at one time, I can guarantee was in a situation regarding some type of child abuse, you know, and it's a sad statistic. It really is. And, you know, and the other thing with, you know, number two of, you know, our goals here is to offer the hope and the healing. Okay. So, you know, there's so many different paths that we have to offer here. And platforms that people could work off of to, you know, become that person and try to get on that road where they've been trying to get to for years and years and years, you know, and that road of being, you know, of healing. And this is what it is. Because the information, you know, for anyone interested, you know, in as many issues involving all of this stuff is that, you know, you can always call in. And be anonymous on tonight's show or any other time, okay? So, Joe, I want to give you that call-in number in case, you know, no one knows it or didn't hear it on one of our previous shows. It's area code 646-595-2118, okay? And you can remain anonymous. It's okay. And if you have a comment or a question, you know, regarding some of the topics that we do here at NASCA, you know, nothing is too small. In fact, usually those are the things that we need to know the most. So and I know that we have a lot of people that are calling into the panel tonight, which is a great thing. And these people I see calling in are very experienced. They've been doing this a very long time, as have I. And we're going to be here for anybody that wants to call in tonight, including our very own president. Has called in tonight, and which is always great to hear from Bill Murray. You know, and you should read the story of how and why Bill started this years ago, and how far he's came. I'm telling you, it's quite an extensive story in itself. However, that you know where this has led to is just a phenomenon. It really is. It's such a beautiful place to be. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to also go back into an open mic or open discussion mic night for any topics that may come up tonight. Okay, so we were going to have a special guest call in tonight of Lori Golden. Is Lori in?
Yes. Yeah.
Hi, Lori.
Right
how
there.
Are you?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
can
I can.
Can you hear me?
How are you?
Okay.
I sure can.
I'm okay.
Hi, Lori. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for calling in tonight. I know that you have been, you know, associated and know about NASCA for a long time, and you have quite a story behind you tonight. So if there's anything, you know, that you would like to begin with or whatever, it's fine. This because you've been here before. However, before we get that started, though, I want to let everyone know about Lori, just a little off of her bio, okay? Well, she's from San Diego, okay? And, you know, she's such an extravagant woman on the things that she, you know, has reached to this goal and a loss of getting out information and being an advocate, you know, in the ways that she's doing it. But, you know, she was a survivor herself. She's a private psychotherapist working with trauma and abuse survivors. And she isn't a survivor of incest, okay? So, you know, that's such a horrific situation in itself, you know, but there's a lot of good things that are going to come out of this. So, you know, with that being said, I do want to also welcome Carol into the show. Carol Levine is here, who's the vice president of NASCA, and does a wonderful job every day of the week for us. So thank you too, Carol. Lori does a lot of different things from what I'm seeing in her Facebook pages and in life alone, with, you know, writing a book and just being a true advocate for all the right reasons, you know. So Lori, let me ask you this. Would you like to, you know, give a history of times when you were young? I know you've been through this before, but I think it's a good time for maybe you to paint, you know, that picture for people that don't understand or know who you are. So when we get into the discussion in a little while, to let them know exactly, you know, what you've been through.
Yeah. Do you want me to do that now?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I grew up in what I call a, you know, very nice community. No crime, you know, it was out on Long Island. And as far as I felt like no other family was like my family. And I grew up with my brother and my sister. My brother's 10 years younger and my sister is 4 years older. Mm-hmm. And my father started abusing me sexually when I was 5 and really continued on until I was 16. And the only reason why he stopped was he started on my brother. And at that time, my brother was 6. So, you know, I grew up in a family where everything was a lie. You know, we looked so good on the outside. But, you know, having nice clothes and, you know, going boating and skiing and doing all these things that my friends were envious of. And so I had a wonderful looking day life. At night, it was a different story. I was terrified. I don't remember a time when I wasn't terrified in my home. I truly was terrified.
You mentioned 5, you know, 5 years old to 16. Okay. Let me just ask you, and I don't want you to feel uncomfortable about anything. You don't have to answer it if you don't want. But what was the actual youngest absolute age or day? You say 5. I mean, I know people younger than that remember. Okay, so you're not telling me anything that a lot of us don't know, because people say, hey, you're that young, you're not going to remember that. I don't remember that. Look, I know different, okay? So, you know, that's what I'm getting at, that it's very possible, isn't it?
Yes, the body, you know, there's a book, The Body Keeps the Score. And the truth is, we feel things in our bodies. And so we don't have to be intellectually in a certain place to understand that something awful is going on in our body. And I so often hear people say, you know, how could you what makes you think you can remember that? And I do. I really do. I really remember. Uh-huh. And a lot of people that I see were often young. Some people remember, you know, pre-verbal. So they couldn't really talk. They didn't understand what they were experiencing in their body. And that goes on all the time.
It sure does, you know, and that's such a great point. I really appreciate you bringing that out because, you know, like I said, there's a lot of people that kind of have a hard time understanding that. And I hate to say don't believe it, but they have a hard time understanding that, okay? And unless, you know, you have experienced that or know someone really close to you that you know, has had that happen, which I do, I can tell you that is very true. And I can see the effects on this one particular girl, you know, that is now 10, okay? And it happened to her.
Yeah.
And I can tell the effects right now, no question about it. Although they look for me for support, you know, and then I handle everything for them. I'm always going to be there for them, like family to me. However, you know, she has been affected since that age, no question about it. You know, so do you think that you were personally affected, you know, on your, let's just use your personality or physical, you know, effects from, you know, the very first times in your life that happened to you?
Oh, this shaped my whole existence. I mean, everything was about living in fear, hypervigilance, never living, never resting easy. I felt like when I living in my home, it was it was isolating.
Right.
You know, nobody talked to one another. So this shaped my
trust. So y'all had that kind of relationship at night. That y'all didn't talk to each other much at home at nighttime.
No.
Y'all didn't talk to each other too much at all?
No, we talked to each other. My sister, my brother, I mean, we talked to each other, but it was isolating because each of us didn't know that we were being sexually abused. I was in so much fear. I was in really an incredible amount of fear. Chance my father got, he put his finger up to his lips and he, you know, kind of did that shh, don't tell.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as I got,
was he threatening you?
Yeah. He threatened to kill. He said we would die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. So go ahead. I'm sorry. But that's just spoiling that he would do that to you like that. Oh
yeah. But it shaped my way of being in the world. I got into drug addiction because of it. The choices that I made were stemming with men.
I do want to talk heavily about that later, okay, if you'd allow me just to take another little step back, because, you know, I know we were talking about this early age stuff, right, and you know, I wanted to ask you what it was like for you and having all of your siblings, okay, and going through middle school time, okay. Because you know, right at the edge of you know, basic, say, fifth grade through say eighth, you know, what was your life like during those days? Because that's when a lot of things happen to a lot of, you know, kids. Number one. Secondly, did you ever try to reach out for help during that time?
No. That was in 1968. I graduated in 1968, so we're talking.
Okay.
You know, there was no talk about any of this. You know, even with my girlfriends, I didn't know what to talk about. I couldn't put it into words. It was just this overwhelming, confusing time.
Yeah, not to mention you were very scared, too.
Yes, and it was the reason why eighth grade, seventh grade was so difficult for me was because my father made it a point of saying, now you're a woman. You know, now we can do more things together. And so, you know, I became like anorexic. I didn't want to have my body. I didn't want to have breasts. I didn't want to menstruate. I didn't want to, anything to do with being a budding young woman, you know, a teenager. Mm. It was really terrifying to have,
yeah. I can...
as I started developing, it's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I can only just imagine what that was like for you. I could see why. Absolutely, you know. And it just, so what happened with your siblings, too, around this time with them?
Well, they were sexually abused as well. My brother, uh-huh. My father started on my brother when he was about six. He started on me when I was five. And my sister can't remember. She doesn't have a sense of when this started for her. You know, she came into the memories much later than I did. I was in my 30s when I remembered.
Right.
You know, she's 74, so they don't have
right.
a beginning point.
Mm-hmm.
Were you
right.
sexually abused, John?
Who, me? Oh,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I was
can you share
almost,
a little?
I can if you'd like me to. I have no problem with that. I'll be glad to tell you. I was raped by a man by the name of George Brignac, Deacon George Brignac, in 1976. Okay, and I'm just going to give you a brief history of what's happened. Okay, over that time is that I actually got help. Back then, okay, my friends saw what was going on, okay, and now the whole school knew. So now I became a laughing stock. They were whistling at me, and just things that went on for a week that will never leave me, you know. However,
yeah,
is that two of my friends came to my help because they knew. Well, you know, needless to say, one of those young boys who I love to death, by the way, went and told my mom. Okay. He told my mother. I could not tell my parents. You know, I was nine. I didn't know what was going on, but the guy would threaten me. He would rape me in class, in the classroom, in front of people. Okay. Right
I
behind
believe,
the desk.
Believe me, I believe it.
And let me
yeah.
tell you what happened. They used to get on garbage cans, stand up on garbage cans in the aisle. I mean, you know, between the classrooms. And look into the transom windows, okay, to watch him while I was on his lap, okay? I mean, this happened for a long time, including my own sister, yes, who was younger than me, okay? She was a grade behind me. So she didn't know really what that was. She's only eight, you know? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, but now that it's her brother. And she wants to know what's going on. She's curious, and she's trying to get up there and see herself, not because she wants to see that. She just has a hard time, I guess, understanding what that is, you know, period.
What kind of
well,
school,
you know,
what kind of school
Catholic.
Was this?
It was,
okay.
It was Catholic. Yeah, Archdiocese, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me tell you what happens from here is that we actually get him arrested, okay, in school. They take him to jail, all right? Yay, you know, everybody's happy. And, wow, you're not going to believe this, you know. They let not only did they let him back in school, okay, is that he winds up getting acquitted off of my trial when I have eyewitnesses, okay? And he admitted
yeah.
to being guilty. He admitted to being guilty to the principal at the time, who was a nun. Okay, admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there it is. You know, well, I'm needless to say that he was acquitted. Okay, they, you know what the verdict was? He was acquitted because we conspired as 3 10-year-olds at the time, because it took almost 2 years for the trial to get there. That we conspired to expose his celibacy. Okay, That's what it says on the verdict. Can you believe that? We are 10.
Yeah.
At this time now.
Yeah.
I mean, it happened when we were all literally, some of us just made 9, you know. I just made 9 like four months before this happened to me. So, well, let me tell you. All right, from here he gets acquitted, right? And of course, they allow him to come back to school. I swear to God, okay?
I believe it.
And guess who got rid of him at the school? It wasn't the archdiocese and him being a deacon at that. It was the men's club that stood up and told him that they don't want him back there and they'll do anything it takes to make sure that he's removed. And you know what the men's club is? They're the dads, right, of the students that go there. You know, well, they already knew what's been going on through the trials and everything else. Well, it was a bench trial, of course, and guess what? The judge was a major Catholic fundraiser, okay? Who else was it? So was the Jefferson Parish Sheriff, who was Connick at the time, who, if you're from New Orleans, you know the Connick name, okay? Harry Connick Jr., okay?
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
That's his dad, okay? So there you go. Well, anyway, everybody worked on the same page back then. We never had a shot. Okay, they gave us 9 subpoenas. Can you believe that? And you know what? My mom was in her third trimester of her pregnancy. Okay, and the whole time, like I have a younger brother that's you know 10 years, 11 years younger than me, right? So she was getting ready to have him. And in the meantime, you know, she's got to go to her doctor because she's all stressed out after making my mom go down there for how many times, 9 to 10 times, you know, trying to run us off, you see. That's what it was all about.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, well, he still gets acquitted, needless to say. Don't be shocked by this, okay? I'm gonna tell y'all something that eats at me every day is that George Brignac is the most prolific child rapist in Louisiana's history. Okay. And after me, now this is after me, 26 victims. Okay. 26.
Yep.
And I actually take him to court and he still gets a hold of 26 years. They still allow this man into the system until 2018 where we finally got him convicted. I say we. There was a boatload of people that was coming forward, and thank God that one particular guy did. And I had no idea that he was even on the earth anymore. Okay, I thought he was dead, because I'll just tell y'all straight out that that was my hard times in my life. Yes, I wanted to commit suicide. Yes, I wanted to kill him. You know, and that's just the way I was living on stuff: drugs, alcohol. You know, it does this to you. I mean, look, it's trauma, you know. And I had to move out of state for 15 years. I had to move, you know. So I just to let you know, where my life has gone to, you know, is because basically the Archdiocese has trained me since I've been 8, okay, of what not to do, okay. What is it going to take to heal people?
Yeah.
Because now we have over 420 victims through the Archdiocese here in New Orleans, okay? And I'm in solely responsible, I will say, and I'm very proud of, to help in one particular area, and that's to expose over 80 priests and bishops and deacons here, okay, along with a couple other people. I can tell you that we're the ones that did that, okay? And I'm proud of it. And I'm also proud to know that we are have forced the archdiocese into bankruptcy here, which I don't think it should happen anyway because there's still some ongoing allegations, and I'm not going to get into that on the NASCAR show, but however, I'm just letting y'all know where I am today. And after what happened yesterday here in Louisiana was a major victory for people around the world because we put away, and I say we, I speak for a lot of people, okay, and when I say that, all right, is that we put away a 30-year sheriff here in Louisiana for life yesterday.
Cool.
4 aggravated counting rape. Okay? Yep. Mm-hmm. He's gone. Hey, this is a leader of our community. You know? I mean, here we go again. Nobody is above the law at all. I don't care if it's a dad or a sheriff or a president or whoever, you know. But no,
yeah.
you do it, you will pay. So so that's basically, you know, my story of my worst times. I mean, I could do five shows on my story alone, because there's so much more to know in graphic details and things that went along with the process. I mean, it could always happen, you know, and I'm always willing to share that. And of course I have my own organization now, Lori, too, but I try to keep, you know, us two kind of away from each other at certain times, but also at the same time, I try to help each other at the same time too, because I know everybody needs their space, you know. However, we have a lot of people who do, you know, participate in this show that are one of my members, you know, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we need each other. We actually need each other. And that's what it gets down to.
Yeah.
Because no matter what the organization is, if you have the same goal, then you're a team. You know, you really are, to one degree or another. So, and it takes people just like whoever's here today. So listen, we are into the show a pretty long way already, but I do want to bring some other people on, you know, to let them, you know, talk a little bit, Lori, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, first and foremost, I want to thank you again for being here. But your first guest is going to be none other than our president, Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
So, Bill, are you with us?
I am here.
Well, welcome.
Hi, Bill.
Thank you very much. Your NASCAR show.
Hi, how are you? Okay. Well,
and thank you for being here.
You bet.
Yep.
And I'm just delighted that she's a part of the NASCAR family. She's doing this once a month, of course, as are all the people that do a Tuesday or a Thursday. They do one each month. So it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, there's a lot of need for people to come forward and be guests. Well, this relieves me of two people a week anyway. And they're always great.
Right.
They're always great. Because these are people who are not only, we call them hyphenates, they're not only professionals, but they're also survivors. So their survivor professionals makes them a hyphenate. They can speak to and understand the perspectives from child abuse, whether it's, you know, as a victim or as a, you know, recovered person. In either way, they have something to say, and they have something really truthful to say. They have the experience for both ends. So, Lori, God bless you. I love you to death, and you know, I'm really appreciative of your, you know, she talks very clearly and very honestly.
Yes.
And that will impress a lot of newcomers out here, John. So thanks very much for calling on me, and I'll recede now into the background a bit.
Okay, Bill, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Bill. Now, I want to introduce for everyone out there that doesn't know Carol Levine. She is our vice president here. I know that also Carol and Lori are very good friends and deserve to be for many reasons. So, Carol, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm just doing fine. Thank you.
Great,
yeah.
Great.
Lori, I'm so
glad. Thank you for participating.
I'm so glad you're here, Lori. Yeah, she and I spoke a couple days ago, and she was going to have a topic for tonight, or I was going to have a topic. But now I have a topic for Friday, so I'm not going to worry about it. Lori, is there something that you'd like to – I didn't know you were going to be on tonight, John. There must have been a change in the schedule or something. It doesn't matter. This is good. All right, now, Lori, is there something that you'd like to talk about?
Yes.
Yeah. Hold on one second. Hold on. Let's back up a little bit, Carol. Okay. Do you just have a particular question for her on her abuse or anything like that, or a particular comment? Because we're going to get back to her story, which we're working on right now. So we're moving on.
Okay.
So
okay.
I don't
want to
get ahead.
Okay. Hold on a second, John. Okay. On Tuesdays, we do have the I know, we do have the Survivor Professionals come on. And what we do on Tuesdays and Thursdays is we leave this slot open so that people can call in from the outside if they should have a
right.
question that they'd like to, you know, ask Lori. We've already done her
sure.
story. In fact, we did it, I don't know,
okay.
we talked about her story about a couple of weeks ago. But that doesn't matter.
No,
I don't have any.
We told
okay.
it. Yeah, we told it on and off.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
yeah, we have.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So is it, was there something,
okay,
because
fine.
This is, no, this is her night to, she's the professional that comes on, the survivor professional,
mm-hmm.
And what right. she does is a lot of times our survivor professionals do have something that they
mm-hmm.
like to speak about. So I'm asking
exactly.
her, is there a topic, okay, that maybe she
oh, okay.
wanted to cover?
Okay.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
and
because
right. It's not storytelling night. You could, it
yeah, well,
matter,
I understand that. I understand that, but, yeah, again, I already asked you that question, so that's fine. Yeah, but it's up to you all. Yeah, y'all go with it, and I'll be right here.
Okay, that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay, so, Lori, we had spoken, what was it, yesterday or the day before? I guess it was the day before. And we were talking about topics that maybe we, you know, might discuss. So as to encourage those that are listening, you know, to call in, I have one, if you don't have one, that we could cover. I was going to cover it maybe on Friday,
oh.
but I can cover it now. Go ahead.
Okay. Let me hear.
Do you want me to do it? Okay. Because you're the boss
yeah.
tonight.
Yeah.
You're the boss. Do you
now,
realize that? You're the boss. Okay. All right, here's the deal. It's that time of the year, okay?
Yeah.
Holidays are coming up, and I want to get this
yeah.
out because you're here, and maybe it'll encourage people to, you know, to call in because they have so many problems during the holiday season. As an example, and this is a question that I would end up posing to you, I was given a presentation one night, and a gal stood up, and she said, okay, the holiday's coming up. It wasn't Christmas. It was Thanksgiving. And she said, my
mm-hmm.
abuser is going to be sitting at the table that I'm going to be sitting
yeah.
at. And she
yeah.
said, please tell me what to do. Well, I don't like to tell people where they should go, where they shouldn't go. It's a matter of comfort. Now, obviously, she was distressed because she wants to see the rest of her family members, you know, but she doesn't want to have to sit across, say, and she would be sitting across from this person because he would make sure that he was sitting across from her. What do you say
yes.
to people around holiday time? Do you think that they have to go and go through that? What's your opinion on that?
No. No, I do not think anyone has to go that has been abused, especially within families. Listen, people suicide a lot, you know, during holidays, people
uh-huh.
relapse on alcohol, drugs. Some people come in, I did on January 15th, I came in, that's my clean date, but eating disorders, bulimia, it's so crazy to be with a family that isn't dealing with the abuse at all. It's awful. And I really, what I talk to people about is, do they feel they can keep themselves safe? And we go over what can you do to keep yourself safe? And one of the things that people do is they do visualizations where they have like this glass in front of them at all times. They picture the glass in front and it keeps anything that's not okay out. But I often say to people, if you do not want to go, you don't have to go. It should be an option, not a given.
Yeah, that's a great question, Carol. Really is.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't even by me. It was by that gal, yeah. And then it is a concern, okay? Because picture yourself. I mean, I can picture myself in my home where most of the time that I lived, my brother was my abuser. I mean, I had the uncle, the dirty uncle, as I like to call him. He was first in the pedophile house, but then it turned into my dirty brother. And I think to myself, he's the golden boy that so often that people have actually come up with that phrase, golden boy, in their families. And I like that. I think it's catchy, and I don't know, maybe it's something that's not new, but it was new to me. So the golden boy would make sure that he would sit right across from me, and he'd smirk. You know, he'd look up and smirk at me because he was always abusing me, and no one cared. Now, there's a lot of me's out there, okay? And when I got to the age, and I'm going to say 18, where I was driving, I finally got my driver's license at 18 because I did get caught, naughty, naughty, at 17 driving in New Jersey. It's all right to drive at 17. But I didn't have a license because no one ever took me driving or any of that other stuff. So I had to wait until I was 18. That was my punishment. I went to court. I had to wait until I was 18. So I would say that New York is 18 also. But anyway, the point is this. My thought on it was, all right, the minute I turn 18, I'm going to take off and never come back on, especially on Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving is a time for families, and you're supposed to be loving each other and be, you know, so thankful that you have a family and all this other stuff. Couldn't do it. I couldn't handle it. No way. So I remember telling the girl, I can't tell you what to do, but I can tell you that I wouldn't want to be in the same house, especially on Thanksgiving, with my abuser. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the way I kind of left
Carol.
It.
That's the best thing to do, you know, is that you want to leave that option, you know, for them to think about, however. You know, it is a very, very good point, you know, during this time of year, especially when someone has gone through a lot, you know, and they're actually, you know, going through a lot at the moment versus have gone through a lot in the past, okay? And then it all comes folding on at once and says, hey, you know, maybe would you, you know, want to come to Thanksgiving this year, maybe for the first time, maybe since many, many years ago, who knows how the story goes, but I wouldn't want to be in that house either myself, just for the sheer sake of being triggered, you know? You know how survivors are, is that we try to stay away from the negative impacts. However, there's other ways, I think, that it can be handled. And it doesn't have to be over a Thanksgiving meal or family or things like that. You know, that could possibly be worked into, you know, in the future. However, you can't do that overnight, in my opinion. And I don't think I'd ever recommend that to anybody. So, you know,
well,
I've been through that
what
many
I,
times. I
what
know
I
all
like,
have.
Yeah, what I like to ask people, what I like to focus on with people is, because a lot of people, everyone that I have ever seen that has been sexually abused, a childhood sexual abuse, particularly in families, can never be around in their home without doing something harmful to themselves. So I always ask people what harm they do to themselves when they're around their families, because I did. I was very harmful to myself around my family, and, you know, and it was torture. It was torture to be at a table with everyone from my family. So I know, you know, I had an eating disorder.
Do you care to share any of that with us?
Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, do pills, but, you know, when I was teen, I would, like, do pills I would steal pills out of my mother's cabinet. Of course, she said she never did drugs, but anyway, I would take her pills and I would not eat and exercise like crazy. And when, but I always overate, and then I would hate myself and be completely, I would just hate myself. It was just self-hatred. And I think that when, if being around family means that you have to self-destruct, well then, what's the point of being around the family?
Right.
Right.
I think that's where the toxic people come in. I had to learn that though, Lori. We all have to learn that. It's not something that you learn overnight. And I think what happens, And for one thing, you're trying so hard to get the love and affection, you know, from the other family members, okay? And with Golden Boy sitting there, and I felt like kicking him. I really did. I wanted to kick him so bad. And because I knew what he was doing with his smirking and sitting right across from me. It's a matter of intimidation, and I will not be intimidated anymore. Okay. So with Golden Boy there, if it were happening today, I haven't seen him since 2008. I told him, don't call me again until you can learn to be a normal person. And he never called me again.
Huh.
Right.
2008, okay.
Wow.
So, and that's fine with me. I look him up every once in a while to see if he's still alive. I don't know.
He
is still alive, And I don't want to see him. But, you know, the point is, when we go through this in our families, and Lori, you're going to be able to speak about this, for God's sake, with what happened to you, when you have these people around you who abused you, and then you have brothers and sisters, and I had half-sisters, at least I thought they were until Ancestry showed me differently, which I'm actually thankful about. But, but when you have those other people sitting around you, not knowing if they were abused and all the things that you went through, you know, it must have been horror for you, you know, for anyone. Yes. And I can see why you did self-harm. I understand that. Well, everybody would.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
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 Absolutely. I mean, so, as far back as I can remember.
Mm-hmm. I know. So the holidays are coming again. And even though I'm in a good place today because I have my children, and they turned out well, thank God. Sometimes I don't know how, but they did. Really. I'm very proud of that. You know, I'm proud of them that they did turn out so well. But now I'm having, like, making up time, and I'm sure a lot of people can identify with this, because when you do get to a good place in your life, then you can start, you know, celebrating the holidays with fun and with a good spirit and a good heart and just enjoy life, you know. I'm going to give out the number here because I want people to think about what we're talking about here. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And people out there, you survivors especially who are listening, you're going through the same thing, a lot of you. Not all of you, but a lot of you. And with the holidays being so close now, there's a part of us, you know, that I love Christmas. I love Christmas. I love Christmas lights and all the Christmas festivities. And but whether it be Christmas, or, John, like you said, it doesn't matter which holiday it is. Well, it can be birthdays, for God's sake, right? You had to go to birthday parties over the years and still see the abusers in your life and so forth. All these things can bring a person down. And, Lori, when you speak about that's when you did yourself harm, I can actually identify with that because I sliced my wrist in very close to Thanksgiving Yeah. When I was 17.
I was in that same boat too, guys. You know, no question about it. I mean, it's all that time. For me, a lot of my time over my years have been really associated with more or less Thanksgiving. I hate to say it or pick out a certain time, but yes, Thanksgiving was always difficult for me. And I was in that same boat, you know, no question. Because I see, and around the same age too, by the way, Lori, that you had some issues, you know, when you were attempting that at 27. You know, can you maybe just kind of explain, you know, what led you to that moment, if you remember, or, you know, or did you think of it before?
It was this time of year when I tried to commit suicide, and I was rushed to the hospital. I had my stomach pumped, and I was in the hospital back then. I should have been in a drug rehab, but I was in the hospital for a couple of months. And, you know, what I noticed, what happens to people is in October, they start getting nervous about Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yes, they do.
People get depressed or more anxious, and it's really, and especially with the idea that you're supposed to, you know, you look at all these families and you think, oh my God, look at the family that I came from. Well, there's a lot of other people that came from the same family that I did, so. We're actually not so few in number, but
and just from experience, I'm sure that everyone on this panel can agree, because at this time of year, for us, it was a time to drink more, to do more drugs when we were young. Mm-hmm. Just that time of year, you know, and because of what you're saying, it was a trigger. It was something that we used to, you know, get over these times of being so, you know, pinned down by the effects it would happen to us versus, you know, being around family at that time and having to know that we have to come through for Christmas for our kids at the same time deal, you know, with all of the personal issues that we went through, you know. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it is, no question. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Bill, let me ask you about that. How do you feel about that?
This topic is one that I plan to do a show on it. We do this annually. We do shows on shows on different topics, and there's easily enough material here to do like a week long topic on this because there's so many aspects to this to discuss. And I find it really important to understand my own reactions to, even today, to issues that come up during the holidays, but also, you know, having learned a little something about it myself and having a little bit of experience myself, you know, transmitting that to the newcomer who's really lost. And believe me, when I was drinking or smoking pot or whatever, and I was with my parents, I was fine. It was when I stopped that fell apart, you know. There was no reward from them that I had stopped. I didn't drink any more than some of my relatives, you know, because they were all drunk too. But I wasn't there to tell them they had to stop. But they weren't going to let me tell them to stop either. Anyway, the point is that you get into, there's a lot of material here about the holidays and how to deal with them and how to, you know, how to not deal with us too. We'll cover, you know, over the next several weeks because it's really important.
Right.
Really important.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yeah.
What we need to have, John, is a lot of support during this time because many of us did and do turn to alcohol and drugs, and certainly we did as a child. Well, I mean, I did anyway. I don't know what other people
did. And eating disorders.
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say, Carol. You took it right out of my mouth. You know, and this is what we do. We have to step it up, though, is what we're getting at. Because we didn't have these opportunities before. You know, now people do. And this is what the NASPI platform is all about, you know, having everyone that's on this panel available. You know, and mm-hmm. plus we have many, many more, you know, between Penelope and we have Deborah and the list goes on, you know. And, mm-hmm. and God, what a beautiful place to be if you need it. You know, that's what I'm getting at, is that we are going to have to be there because it's always gets what I would call heavier this time of year when it comes, you know, to trauma-related issues, you know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
a lot of
times
people being there.
Let Lori speak.
With the approaching holiday, people feel more alone. And that is, it's the aloneness that comes as a result of being abused and being alone with your perpetrator. And it's a very scary kind of aloneness. And that's when people want to hurt themselves. When they feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very correct.
It's a very
and I can
heavy
tell you what,
feeling.
One thing,
it's a very heavy
one
feeling,
thing that,
John. John,
go ahead.
I'm talking.
Go ahead.
It's a very heavy feeling. She was talking about it's a bad feeling that you have, and that's why I started to talk. When people are alone, and they don't like being alone. I don't care at this point in my life, okay, because no one tells me what to do. They don't tell me what I can't do. They don't can't tell me where I can go and where I can't go. But I have to admit, you know, because you don't have to answer anybody. I don't have to answer anybody except for me and God. That's the way I look at it. But there is a certain time, you know, during the course of the holidays that even I, who feel like I'm happy now, finally, for the first time, I'm not being screamed at, all this other stuff. You know, there are some nights where I feel like, well, it would be nice to cuddle up next to somebody, you know. It would be nice. And then I just get up and I go take a ride or because I'm up all night anyway. Or I'll watch TV, something that's funny, because we have to get ourselves out of that mode, that sadness mode that, you know, that we can't get into. I've gotten very fussy, Lori, with whom I go out with now. I'm trying hard not to make the same mistakes that I made in the past. Since I moved here, I've only been here, two and a half to almost 3 years, whatever, I turned down some guys. But they make moonshine around here. Do you know what moonshine is?
Okay.
Oh, Lord Jesus, do they make it. And I don't want to get involved with that because I don't like the taste of moonshine. I was a beer drinker.
Yeah.
I loved my beer. Mm. And there were a couple mixed drinks that I liked. Slow gin fizz, I liked that too. And Kahlua.
I'm going to have to introduce you to some moonshine made from sugarcane. That
oh, no,
like.
Baby, I'm not drinking it. No way.
I'm only kidding.
I'll be out dancing in the streets, and then I'll be barfing.
Yeah.
You want to see that? But anyway.
Well, hey, they do it in New Orleans every day. So.
I know they do. Yes, they do. Yes, they do. But, you know, it's like I'm trying to be smarter. All right, the red flags are all over the place many times, but somehow because of the way that we were brought up, we don't see them. You know what I'm saying? And then you get involved in a situation, with a person, and then you realize you made another stupid mistake. So, you know, I don't know. It's getting rough. It's getting rough. But, you know, that's the way it is. We have, even though we are survivors, we still have some issues because of what we went through as children. And who better than the survivors, you know, to talk about these issues than we, the survivors, because we're not alone. You know? We're not alone. Mm-mm. Go ahead, Lori. I know you have more to say.
No. I was agreeing. We're not alone.
Well, there's people that are listening right now. I know they're listening because that's what they do. And a lot of times they don't want to come on air. In fact, I handed out more cards yesterday. Yes, I know there's listening. People are listening. Mm-hmm. Yesterday I had to go to the dentist. Oh, what fun. And then I had to go for physical therapy setup starting Monday, three times a week. Wonderful. I had written you about that. Yeah, I wrote you about that. And
I
was handing out cards, NASCAR cards, every place that I go. So I know the people from where I was, that they are definitely listening. So be on your best behavior. We have to be on our best behavior. Mm-hmm. I have to see these people. There you go. Right? So, but anyway, the point is just about every family knows of someone or they have someone in their own family, you know, who has alcohol, drug abuse, or something, or eating disorders. We know people or we have them in our family. And there's a reason for that. And Lori, for God's sake, you certainly had your reasons, and I had my reasons, and John, he had his reasons. We all have our reasons because of trying to put that Band-Aid on that cut that's a foot long, and the Band-Aid is only an inch long, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I always tell people to find a therapist that who understands, though, child abuse. See, that's the problem.
Yes.
They can call me all they want.
I
agree. Yeah. And they call me in the a.m. because I'm the night owl. And I do the best I can with them because I am a counselor, and I talk to them. But if they need more, I send them to our programs. I do want to mention the programs. Our NASCA programs are on the website. That's naasca.org, nasca.org. And if you scroll down, you'll see the red lines, and that is right. You'll see that there's programs and there's statistics. You go across the screen, and you'll see all different types: prevention, intervention, and recovery for children, and all this stuff. And but the programs, especially during this time of the year, if you feel like you're too alone, it's good to go and join a program. If you go to that website, okay. And open it up, you'll see a picture of the world spinning around. And with the world spinning around, there's also down below a little bit, there's a list. Now, we are worldwide, so we do have some countries there. We have Down Under the call at times. We've had someone calling from Vietnam a few times. I mean, they call in from all different places, UK, all kinds of places. But the United States is what I focus on. So I get calls at times, and sometimes from New York, a lot of times from New York. And New York City, oh, my God, they're so full of programs. People don't know this unless you tell them. So you go to the United States, and you click on to whatever state you're from. This is all very simple. And once you open it up, everything is alphabetical. All right, it's alphabetical. And in New Jersey, if you're from Camden, New Jersey, you go down to Camden. If you're from wherever, you go down to your city and click onto it, and you've got a bunch of programs. There's programs there. Some places offer more than others. And maybe you might have to go a town over, okay, if you're more in a rural area. But if you're in more of a city area, there's going to be a lot more programs available. I do get a lot of good response from people who do go to the programs. And if they have to go a couple before they find the right one, that's fine. They've found it and they're happier. Because, whether it's programs or whether you have someone wonderful like Lori here, for God's sake, who's a, how long have you been a therapist for? 25 years, is it? What was it? I forget.
Since 1982.
Since 1982. There you go.
Actually, that's when I went into private practice. Since 1978.
Yeah. That's when I started in social services with the Raleigh Lifers program, Scared Straight, in 1978.
Yep.
And then I went from there.
Yep.
But anyway, the point is, make sure, like, you find someone like Lori. I mean, my God, she's a survivor. She has a tremendous amount of, you know, things to offer you, a lot of good things to offer you. She understands because she's been there. She's walked the walk, okay? Yep. And she knows how to talk the talk. So she would be a perfect person, you know, to get in touch with, you know, who could help you. So the point of the whole thing is, yes, we're at that time of the year. We'll be talking about, you know, Thanksgiving, Christmas. Hey, look, even the first of the year, that's a big party time. Come on now. People are out all over the place, you know, and,
yep.
and yep. that's coming up too. This year went by so fast. So
mm-hmm.
we, the survivors, we need support. Oh, yeah. So go ahead, Lori. What do you think of that one?
No, I agree. We need,
mm-hmm.
that is the best thing that you can do for your healing is support. Because the more support you have, the less secret you are, the less of the secret. And that's when real healing takes place. You know, I often, when I work with people, they have to be willing, and I help them to get to that place, but they have to be willing to reach out to community, you know, to programs, whether it's online or whether it's in the community. But because I think there's nothing like programs and groups of people for healing. There's nothing better.
Right.
That's why they work.
And also which brings up a good point too about support is, you know, at NASTA we work at this all the time. Every one of us do, one way or another. And it's a good time, you know, to help donate to NASTA. It really is. It's a perfect time. You know, it's like
yeah.
we have every available platform almost in this world that's going to be for someone. However, you know, we also have other things like in Spanish, you know, we there 7 days a week, you know, there's meetings and that's what Carol was saying, you know, is that all you have to do is go in and just, you know, take 5 minutes. Hey, what's 5 minutes of your time? And to learn a little bit about NASCO and see what it's about. And if you ever have a question about anything, there's so many platforms of people here to answer that for you if we can, okay? And that's the other thing, too, that because of the people that are involved with NASCA, is that we have this from coast to coast. And I'm going to tell you what, if you look on a scale of where NASCA has landed, it is worldwide, people, you know? We are around the world, okay, literally around the world. So, you know, we are here for everyone. But I want y'all to know that call-in number that Carol gave out, and I'm going to give it out again, you know, just for your own purpose to have it. Write it down. You can be anonymous if you'd like. We don't have to, you know, tell anything about you whatsoever if you have just a comment. On what our topic is all about tonight, and that is 646-595-2118. My name is John Anderson, along with Carol Levine, and our special guest, Lori Golden, tonight, along with our president, Bill Murray. It's been a very, very great show. We got about 20 minutes left. We have talked about so many things tonight. You know, regarding the life and times of Lori Golden, she has had so many things she's been through. We were at the point where she was 33 years old and moving on and trying to get some things done in her life. But then she was, you know, turning some stuff around, which I'd like to get back onto that and maybe talk a little bit about your book. You know, so
yeah.
Is it called My House of Lies?
Yeah, very appropriate
okay.
title.
Yeah,
okay.
right.
Well,
you
did tell us.
I grew up in the house of lies.
You explained to us why. Yes, you did. So now, mm-hmm. you know, why you explained why your house was a house of lies. So let's tell us, why don't you tell us more about that book and everything and how it's going.
It really is my story. I cover myself as an addict, getting into recovery. I cover my, you know, eating, my having exercise bulimia, which is, you know, overeating and then working out to get rid of what I ate.
Right.
And I talk about growing, the details of growing up in a family where you have to, it's insanity. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I would come out of my bedroom after having a night with my father, and my mother would greet me with this, like, warm, hello, how was your night? And what do I say to that? So I was always hiding, always around my mother. I was constantly hiding it deep inside me because I never knew how, I never knew what I wanted to even talk about, let alone what can I say? Daddy was in my bedroom all night. I mean, you know, it was just.
So is that
all
in your book?
Say is it was in that. Yeah, it's all in my book. My first remembering, because I had amnesia, so it was take you through my remembering and all the different memories that came up in me and the effect it had on me. And, you know, I cover growing up, the full thing about growing up. It's not from a psychological point of viewpoint.
Uh-huh.
It's from a child and an adult living in abuse and living in insult.
Okay. Which brings up a good point, too, is that I want to ask you something, and you, if anybody would be able to answer this question, it's you, is that what do you and how do you feel about repressed memories?
About who?
Repressed memories.
Oh, that was such a big deal when I started coming into my memories. You know, not believing the memories, they were repressed. I don't know about you, but in my flashbacks, I was in the exact moment that things were happening to me. The age, I was in the room, my flashbacks opened up. I felt like I was, I could do time travel. Like suddenly I was living in the moment that the sexual abuse was taking place. So when people talk about, you know, repressed memories and, you know, are they real? Aren't they real? Yeah, we do repress it, but we really, it's amazing how it stays intact the way we lived in it. I mean, people have flashbacks a lot, and they really, it brings them right into the center of what happened. So, yes. I mean, I had amnesia.
Okay, that's even more difficult. So how do you deal with that?
Well, you don't until you suddenly have memories. You know, I didn't. When I got off drugs, I started feeling terror at nighttime. And then I slowly started to remember being sexually abused, and not knowing it was my father yet. And, you know, There were warning signs that I had as a child, you know, when I look back. I mean, I would masturbate under my desk at school. I mean, I was young. And I would have my eating disorder and what I just all these different things about me, bedwetting, you know, just symptoms.
That is very common about any type of abuse victim, whether they've been beaten physically, which comes along with sex abuse, but too, that is so common.
Yes.
Every one of them that I've ever known, it really is.
Well, they regress. They go backwards, John. That's why they start to, you know, the bedwetting comes back. And I want to point out something there, because there's probably people out there who did something very similar and maybe even feel guilty about it. But we have lists in the website of all the, you know, things that children display, the type of behavioral, okay? And one of the behavioral with the younger ones is, yes, many times they do masturbate or they what they do, and, of course, they do when they get older, too. But, you know, the point is they start at a very early age because they have been abused. And it brings forth a sensation that they never had before, you know? And there are times when children do, you know, enjoy it, and then they feel guilty later on because, well, the perpetrator will say to them, well, I could tell you enjoyed it. And it's not, we don't ask to be sexually abused or abused in any way. We cover the physical, the mental, the emotional, the neglect, all of the things that we cover. But the body was made and designed in such a way that it does respond to stimuli. So that's number one. And then number two, the very fact that you were doing that in school, one of the things that are on that list, and I suggest people do look that up, you know, with the behaviors. In fact, that's what I'm handing out, the behaviors of children who have been sexually abused or are being sexually abused. A lot of times the little kids, they come out with wording that a child would never know. Or they'll rub against things. I knew of a little kid that did that. They were rubbing against the arm of a chair, and it was the right height, for lack of better wording. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, because of that.
Go ahead. And also, Lori, too, is that, you know, when you're that young, and something has been taken away from you so valuable, is that we all have to come down to the concept of we had our first sexual experiences with a predator, you know? And that's basically the way it is. How do you conceive that in growing up in life, you know, as far as like the trauma of it? In other words, how does it affect your sex life, your love for people when it comes to that? You know, there's a lot of issues here. That we only gonna, you know, we don't ever have enough time in the day to talk about all of this. However, is that we can touch up on some of it and talk about it today, you know, but we can't forget because these are very important topics, you know, and I always write things down and I'll always have it here. However, is that, you know, being victims and when your virginity was taken away from you, when it was, you know, through however means, doesn't matter who or where, it to me is the most traumatizing thing that could happen to a small child.
It's all traumatizing. You know, so many people think that sexual abuse is rape. It's not just rape. It's molestation, it's the way you're touched, it's the way you're looked at. I mean, there's so many different ways that people have had sexual abuse from adults, lots of different ways. So I just want to make that statement.
Well, it ruins relationships too, you know.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, I know that even with myself, I mean, and I'm certainly not alone. I mean, there's so many, many, many survivors, and they're not sure of the stats, so I'm not going to say it, but it's gone way up because people are now starting to talk more, okay, and that's good.
Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah.
The point is, even in our personal life, when we get older, you know, you say in your 20s, in your 30s, your 40s, whatever, you know, you have problems many times in your personal lives with other, you know, with your mate, you know, your husband, your wife, your girlfriend, your whatever, because, you know, it affects us. We're different. Well, maybe we're more sensitive. Some people don't like that when I use the word sensitive. But you know what?
Yeah.
Sometimes we are too much sensitive. And we take things the wrong way. Some of us don't know how to say thank you. Some of us, because we were always, you know, downed when we were a kid. And if someone gives us a compliment, we think maybe they're lying or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
All these things. It affects us
and
in so many ways. Yes.
There's so much more to that, too, is that how about that relationship? Like when you finally, meet that person, that special person in your life, and you're an adult, and, you know, things are going really good, and things start to happen inside of you, you know, in your mind, you know, when it comes to this specific moment. It's like, yes, you love this person dearly, in and out, it's, she's perfect or he's perfect. Whatever, you know, but when it comes down to that specific thing, lives can be changed around at that moment, you know, because things start to happen, you know, and that's what I'm getting at is that, you know, there is a lot that comes behind this and more than a lot of people can even imagine, you know.
That's exactly right. I mean, the list would be, 3 feet long, you know what I'm saying, of the ways that it affects us, you know, with our decision making. You know, a lot of times we make, you know, wrong decisions, and we don't realize it at the time, but then all of a sudden we realize, wow, that was a stupid thing to decide. Because, you know, there's so many parts of our life. I was a people watcher because I was trying to learn from people how to behave,
right?
And so it depends on the background that you come from. You know, I mean,
look at this too, is that, you know, at that point, okay, when people do have these issues, guess what it takes now? Not that they don't love this person, okay, at all, and not that they don't get possibly stimulated by them or whatever the case may be, but then it becomes down to relying on a medical pill or something, you know, to make that happen for them, because what's happened to them is that the chemical imbalance on that particular area has been affected, okay? And it's brain damage. It's not a natural flowing situation of the signals that are coming off of the brain to allow you to do this, you know? And it's because
the
trauma that you went through. And I don't have any other further, you know, explanation than what I just said. Because I've done so much reading on it over the years and tried to get with people, just like everyone that's on this panel tonight and especially having Lori here, who could really identify with this more than ever, is to try to figure that part out without having to go that route with taking chemicals, you know?
John, I do want to stress, though, and Lori will agree with this, it's okay if you need to take medicine, okay? There's nothing wrong with it.
It can be a lifesaver.
It can be.
Oh, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
I
don't disagree with that.
Yeah. I mean, some people go through life and just through, you know, talk therapy or EMDR or whatever they use, they find a way to work through their feelings and also, you know, their behaviors. And they have to take an honest, good look at themselves, too, because we make mistakes, absolutely, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
That's not always fun to look at, but that's the truth. And it's because of what we came from, and also, too, we have our own personalities. We have our own makeup, even though it's distorted. So what we need to understand, and there's people out there, I was talking to someone just a couple days ago, Lori. She said, I know I need meds. I know I need it. She says, but number one, I'm embarrassed. And number two, I don't want to turn into a drug addict. Well, if you take it right, you won't.
Right.
And you know, number three, with all the levels that you have to have checked, because she and I she knows where I used to work at Greystone. You have to, when you're in the psychotropic drugs, and of course you know about this too, you have to have your levels checked all the time, and your personalities change. It's very difficult, though. I will say this, that I hate putting it this way, but when people, okay, like ourselves who have been so abused, if we do find a normie, a normal person, what we consider to be normal, they have to understand that those who have been so abused, whether it's physically, sexually, emotionally, neglected, or all of them, that we might have some problems, and then they have to learn how to deal with us, you know, and to understand it, accept us, because we're not perfect. Yes, we were abused, horribly abused, but that doesn't mean that we're perfect. Okay?
It really does. That's true, Carol. That's a very, very well spoken too, by the way. You put that right on the head. I mean, everybody needs to know about this because it's a part of their lives. And I think it always will be, you know. So we always have to talk about these things, you know, to educate the public. And they, isn't that what we do here? I mean, that's what we have to do. And believe me, I mean, y'all have always done an outstanding job with it. And you know, of course, you know, I'm kind of new to the podcast world. I've been doing this for a very, very long time with dealing with issues regarding, you know, childhood sex abuse. But I'm proud to say that I'm learning from the best, okay? And you know that. I've already mentioned that to several people between you and Bill and Penelope and all of you beautiful people. And I can't commend you all enough for the impact that you have made in society. And this is what it's really about, you know. It's not about glory. It's not about fame. It's not about anything else but helping people at the, and saving children's lives and anybody's lives at that. You know, being the children of our future is our most heaviest, you know, of I guess protection that we need to maintain, because it's an investment for everyone on the planet, you know, and we can't let this happen anymore. So, you know, we have about two little over 2 minutes left. Lori, I know that this we have been all over the place tonight with so many good topics. I mean, these were great topics, and I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight and putting up with Carol and me and Bill.
You're putting up with me too.
So
I'm not the only one putting up.
Well, listen, Lori, now what we do, now she's only got 2 minutes, John. What we do is, Lori, do you have any words of wisdom or whatever, hope or whatever, to leave people? Because the holidays are coming.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, if people are listening, then you need to look into a supportive network and programs like this. And, like, there are online programs. If you live in a rural area, you can still go to some support meetings online. So I just always hope that people don't really heal from their isolation and aloneness.
Right.
And that, to me, is there's nothing better than people that understand this and have gone through it. Nothing better.
Right.
So
right.
I couldn't agree
more. I
hope.
And it's
especially
a perfect time
of
year to talk about that. It really is. Yes.
The isolation, John. The isolation.
Yes.
People so often isolate. And that's the worst thing. And because that turns into depression. And Lori knows that, too. So, you know, don't isolate yourself. Just be with the proper people.
Yes.
You know, go to a party, but a good party.
I do recommend and getting out and doing something, you know. Even if it's walking your dog, going for a walk, you know, get out and do something. Don't sit there and be down. Either pick the phone up and call me.
That's right. Well, we're here on Thanksgiving too, John. We're here 365 days a year.
Oh,
and
I'll
I might
right
be
there. Yeah.
I might be a little bit late because I'm going to be out of town, and but I'll be here. And I'm the night owl, so if I don't, if I don't get you here, I get you later on anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But you know,
yeah.
The point is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
well,
I think it was a very good
left.
Show. Yep, I think it was a good show.
And if you see something, say something, please. Thank you for everyone. Y'all have a good night.
Good night now.
Okay. Good night. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Kind of weird. There's no music. I don't know what happened. There we go.
I know. There
now it's the end of the show. I've got flashes.
Yeah. Well, it tells me we got 5 seconds left, and it's like I'm looking at it, and I look at the other time, and it's still got 20.
Well, my clock's a little off on my computer, so that doesn't help anymore.
Yeah. You see, the music is playing, and that's...
Well, when the music plays, then I know it's time to get going. That helps me.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll shut it off completely. I'll close it down. No, okay.
Yeah,
good night
now.
Okay, I got it off. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome. Good night.